Welcome to Why Make Music, a podcast where we dive into the world of creativity and inspiration, hosted by Think Tim. We're broadcasting from planet Earth. Now, without further ado, let's embark on a journey to think, to talk, and to explore why make music.
Welcome to Why Make Music, the podcast where I talk to you about the creative process. This is episode 4 of Why Make Music. I am your host, Think Tim. Think Tim is the name I go by. It is my name. It is what I do. It is what I am. I am a Think Tim. Enough of the madness. So let's begin. Welcome, welcome, welcome to everybody. This is episode 4 of Why Make Music. We are in our 4th episode here of our podcast, and we are talking about cultivating creative ideas. Let me tell you a little bit about myself first before we begin and get into our topic for the day. I am a independent, no affiliation to anything major or anything important in the music industry. I am a self-distributed musician, producer. I have my music distributed to social media and streaming platforms via United Masters, a pay service that allows you to upload your material and they will distribute it to Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Tidal, TikTok, Instagram. I am learning to traverse my way through the social media gambit, and I am coming to you live on this Friday the 13th, 2024, of the lovely month of September. Today in our show, we are going to be talking about the cultivation of creative ideas. Where do your ideas come from? Whether it be music, writing, lyrics, art. I like to think of Why Make Music as the perfect statement, the perfect question, and I guess technically it is the answer. Why make music? So as I begin each episode, we take a look back down the memory of how I've gotten to this point. Each week I like to share a little story. This week I am going to go into a story that's kind of cool, and I don't know if people do this nowadays because I am no longer young. I have many years behind me, and I think I have fewer years ahead of me than I do behind me. So when I was a young teenage kid out there, I got into trouble. I did the things that normal kids do, but at the same point, I was pointed in the direction to be creative and to express myself. I had a friend who was a little older than me, and he was using his creative writing to necessarily chit-chat and meet girls and whatnot. So he got me interested in writing poetry, and along with the musical background I was developing on my own, I basically naturally changed the poetry into lyrics, and it became part of the creative process of self-expression. when you're younger, you really don't necessarily know what to write because you don't have any life experience. And you write about things you see, things you dream, things you want to do, things you want to be perceived as. It's part of your alter ego, I guess, as a child or as a teenager or as a young person trying to find out what they are, who they are, and why they are. So, it's funny because back then I would write songs and write lyrics that were basically very close to home because you didn't know any better. You didn't have any, like I said, experience. But I'm going to turn through some pages. I will flip the pages for you, but it might mess up the sound. But bear with me here, please. Let me get my poetic voice on for you. So, please say I'm satisfied. I stop only a short distance away from you. I can taste your perfume. You don't sense me watching, nor can you hear me speak. So softly, no one but I can hear my voice. From the highest hair upon your head to the very feet that allow you to stand, I have memorized it all. Your skin, I would love to caress. Your eyes, please allow me to stare into. Your kiss, your sweet lips, your sweet kiss. Only within this mind, I watch you work. I see you play. Your voice is a song to sing. I would love to sing and enjoy, to compose the music. That would be nice too. When will we be able to come together to open my emotions without fear? Until that moment, I tell myself not to speak, but yet please say I'm satisfied. Now, with that being said, that was a amateurish type creative poem that those lyrics could be turned into a song, turned into a singing song. It could be turned into a rap song. It could be turned into anything. The point that I'm making right there with that is that everyone can be creative. And everything that you do can be a part of your journey and your experience to be creative. So the question I'm bringing today, which I keep encouraging people to interact and leave comments, go onto my social media, thinktim.com, or at thinktim on Instagram, Twitter. Leave a message, leave a comment, go to Why I Make Music on Instagram. Leave a comment. I will get back. I will respond. But the thing is, I'm actually asking the creative process, what does it bring? Music, how does your creative process start? In the background, we have a few light arrangements, some drum tracks playing. A lot of times when I'm beginning to put together an idea or thought. When it comes to music, I sit down. The first thing I do, I might program the drums a bit. I told you before, the software that I'm using is either Logic Pro or FL Studios 24. New updates on both of those guys. A lot of times, it might be the piano, it might be the keys, it might be the bass line, it might be a guitar line. Fortunately enough, I am able to with my amateur status, I do mess around with the software programs, but I also do still play bass guitar and regular guitar sometimes just to get the idea of where I'm going, and then I translate that over into the digital instruments, the workstations and whatnot, just for clearer sounds and more opportunities to manipulate and change and widen the sound. So when you're putting down drums, most people really try to stick to the standard of what sounds good, what's going on, and it's a rhythmic, natural progression of layering what sounds cool, what sounds nice. Like I said, I'm not a professional. I've never taken a music class. I am talking to you from just basic life experience. And I said before that through all the podcasts that I do from here until the end, the goal is to eventually get to a point where I can actually maybe translate this into video and share the screen and show you the whole entire process of composing and putting ideas down and working your way towards a finished, polished product. Being though that this is episode 4, the last episode we dove into the talk of how many people were putting out music and the realistic expectations of an independent artist and how hard it is to basically market yourself and get the notoriety that you think that you might deserve or you might want, or to reach the level or the goals that you're trying to achieve. This one is not going to be very much so statistically fact-based as the last podcast, which I do highly recommend that you go back and you check them out, because you will see that there is a slow, steady progression that I am working towards of telling a larger story of what I'm doing. And truthfully, I do believe that a lot of independent musicians, artists, we go through this, and we may not necessarily have someone to discuss or bounce our ideas off of, because sometimes you feel as though the ideas that you have are ideas that only solely you have, and things that you're experiencing, the things that you're going through, are only just based upon you. And that by no means is the case. I think everyone who decides to share and integrate themselves into other people's lives, you have to, at one point or another, take into some point of consideration for what you're doing. So, like I said, lyrics. So what do you sing? What do you write about? What do you sing about? I saw an interview the other day, and they were speaking with a entertainer that's been in the music industry for a long period of time. And he said something that I thought was very interesting, because he said, because of his age and because he's been around for so long, he finds that now that he's older, he's reading more, and he's reading more books to kind of, I guess, expand his storytelling capability. As creative folks, we tend to experiment, but all of our experiments are basically based upon our life experiences. So therefore, sometimes you have to kind of interject outside influences into your scenario, which might just be your mind, because you're not expected to travel the world, but you do understand that the things that you speak about and the things that you write about should be worldly enough that it will draw people in. And either you can draw people into your personal experience, which could be very limiting, but at the same point, if you are a expertise at certain things and certain aspects of storytelling, and the storytelling that you're doing is so encapsulating and so engrossing that it, no, put it this way. If you were to write a song and the song basically wasn't realistic enough that people could relate to it, there would be no reason that people will tune in to listen to it unless it's somewhat of a parody and it's meant to be that way. I am never going to judge anybody's material, and I'm never going to criticize or call anyone out for anything, because, like I said, hats off. I salute anyone who is putting music out, who's expressing themselves visually, musically, any type of way. It's what we're here for. It's what we live for. But the thing is that you do realize the musical artists, the creative writers, those who tell a larger story, a more engrossing story, the more detail-oriented story, are the ones that tend to get the recognition. And it's funny because I think music is something that is so personal. It's actually, in my opinion, I think more personal than, say, even some of the better movies that we watch, because by no means do we ever judge a writer of any material in a book unless it's a self-help book or something to be non-fiction. You never hold the person to that. The reason why I say that is because I told you that the era that we're living in right now is 2024, and everyone's aware of how the music industry is, and we're aware of what's streaming and what's broadcast and what we listen to in our streaming situation. But the thing is that you got to realize, the more you can relate to the person, the more you want to bring that person into your world. You know, you want to kind of not necessarily possess, but you feel as though I have something in common with them. There were some great hip-hop artists that when they write, they tell very detailed lyrical stories, and they speak about their life prior to doing music, and sometimes if it involved illegal activities, whatever the situation may be, which is popular in storytelling. But the thing is that the stories were so detailed that law enforcement used the stories to try to entrap the musical artists as though they were not storytellers. And I'm not saying that, oh, that all they are storytellers. But I don't ever see, or I don't ever recall someone going up to a writer of a murder mystery book or a horror book and staking that person out and trying to figure out, oh, do they have bodies in their basements or whatever. So music is way more personal, I'm assuming, and I guess it's just a simple fact that you have the average person with the technology, the platform to basically tell a story that will get a lot of people's attention. And I guess the financial return is great on the storytelling end of it, that basically as you're telling these stories, people tend to get very engrossed in what you're doing, and they assume that it is the reality that you're living. And I guess that's the great part of storytelling. And I'm assuming that, as all situations, stories are also, lyrics of songs are also part of the history of a culture and the history of a people. So therefore, when you have that going on, everything is clicking all on the right cylinders, and you tell a story, your audience is then captured, or they're entranced by what you're saying, and they believe what you're saying, and they believe the image that you're putting forth. I'm just trying to tell you that I do believe that takes work, because you have to think, you're selling yourself as a product to the masses. And some of the best entertainers, they have a look, they have an image, they have a lifestyle that they have to necessarily promote. And nowadays, in the year that we're living in, that you think a lot of times, I said this before, that music seems as though it is a gateway to other things, you know. So you can be a musical artist, and then you could become a sponsor for a brand. You could parlay that into a television show, a movie, books. But at the same point, unlike actors, a lot of times, unless you break that wall and become an actor, people are paying to see the artist that you are. We have in our generation, our time, our lifespan, if I sit back and say, if we look back at the last 40 years of music, there have been people, 40 or 50 years of music, so there have been certain artists that, if you talk about rock music, if you talk about pop music, you talk about R&B, rap, country, polka, all the subcategories that they have, reggae. When I say those things, in your mind, you picture a certain type of person. You picture what the quote-unquote stereotypical image of a rapper would be, of a country artist would be. But nowadays, you have a situation going on at hand, is that music is music, and what you're creating, you might be a hip-hop artist that creates a country song. You might be a country singer that creates a song that becomes hot on the pop chart, which only means that it's popular. You have everyone trying to collaborate with each other, trying to reach more people, because I do believe that we are getting to a point that we're realizing that we have more in common than we do being saying that we're different from each other. I think everyone has access to so much music that we can no longer sit back and say, oh, all I listen to is fill in the blank. You know, so with that being said, since I was speaking about people who write books and comparing their lyrical power of the pen to those who write songs and how they're digested and how they're taken in, my question is, if you are a musician and you're able to if you can properly read sheet music, and you can basically pick up sheet music from front to back, and you can play it as you go along and read it, and you can encapture all the emotions that was meant to go along with that piece of music. How many people that read music actually compose music? I say that because I'm sure the number is great. I'm not going to look it up to quote a number or a stat or whatever, but I'm sure that probably more than likely everyone that can probably read sheet music might have an inner working part of them that's a inner composer, more or less. I say that only because, now flip that around the other way when we come talk about lyrics and writing. We are all literate. At least I hope that we're all literate and able to read. But just because you can read a book doesn't necessarily mean you can write a book. With that being said, back to the music. Just because you can listen and critique doesn't necessarily mean that you could create. I want to believe that everyone, given the proper tools, can do that. Now, what are the proper tools? In the school system, I'm assuming that there is still music programs. I know for a fact that young kids today, high school age, they have music classes and they go on to a garage band. I think it's called band camp or something like that. And or band lab, more or less band lab. And the teacher might show them popular songs, and he shows them on the software using the virtual instruments where to place the notes to recreate songs that they might be familiar with. That right there might be an entryway for a lot of people to just start doing music or do it on their downtime, because I do know that Apple computers, they come equipped with a GarageBand. The cost of buying software for your computer, a starter software program, isn't over $250, and it comes with basically lifetime upgrades. And it's just basically, you can sit here on a screen and not even have an instrument, and you can compose and put together drum patterns. Excuse me. That makes me think about something. So, as a person who has been solely, as of lately, doing, maybe I guess you could say it's self-indulgent musical projects for myself, and not necessarily playing with other musicians outside of my need or my necessity to have someone do something if I can't do it or whatever. But thing is that I've gone to musical events and musical shows, and I love the fact that we have software and new hardware that are so colorful and so bright with the new MPCs and new APCs, digital hardware devices. If you're not familiar with that, those are digital music production devices that are being used a lot of times, and they have pads that trigger certain sounds, and you can do everything from drums to all the other voices and all the other virtual instruments that you had to pre-program into the pads, and then you play them, and depending on what device you have, the pads light up. And I'm like it's cool. I'm like, I have a device here in Akai, and it has pads. My pads don't light up, but I went to a concert a couple of years ago, and it might have been 10 years ago. I'm like, it's the story, but the story is still relevant. So I go to the concert, and I'm there with the people that I'm with, and the person on stage is a well-known music producer, and the music producer is touring with the artists, and the music producer has his corner of the stage on a riser, the whole bit, and he has his equipment next to him, in front of him, so forth and so on. So, you know, normally when you're at a live event, you have the drummer that will break it down and give you a drum solo, and they'll isolate the drummer and let the drummer do his thing, and the bass player could take a run, the guitar solo, the guitar player, the violinist, whomever, whatever music you go to, whatever music you listen to, and whatever type of venue you go to, for whatever type of event you go there for, you will have a person that will then take their solo. So we're in an arena, and they are big, huge monitors, and this said producer takes his solo, but he turns the knob very in the groove, hand up, raising, so forth and so on, but he just basically moves a fader. He wasn't even playing a keyboard or nothing like that. He just basically pressed a button, and then he just pressed a button, and all I'm saying is that, yo, I don't think I could necessarily, I could be hype about my music, don't get me wrong, I'd be hype, but I don't know, in that environment, turning a knob, and it got a loud scream, but I'm just like saying, as a person who I have a multitude of knobs in front of me right now, and keyboards, and buttons, and pads, and whatnot, and I just thought it was very, very funny that got a roaring cheer from the crowd as they zoomed in on him, and he basically just turned the volume up and down, or might have pressed the button to trigger an effect on the thing, which was cool, don't get me wrong, it's very, very cool. I like to do that. I admire the producer. I think that, any, like I said before, anyone who is making a living and doing this, and this is all they solely do, you're right, you're completely all right with me. And like I said, I paid to go to this show, so I'm fully aware of the person's music, and I am fully aware of their talent, so never any hate, I'm just like saying, but the difference is, you go to another concert for another type of music, and you'll have a guitar player, or you'll have a drummer really break it down, but this dude got the same energy level from the crowd as though he was playing a drum, which I salute it. I think it's great, because I would love to have that type of people hollering and screaming and cheering, I guess, more or less. But anywho, I digress. So, sorry about that cough. But where do you begin your process? So, like I said, I tend to want to start with the drums, and normally it's just a basic situation with the kick and a snare. You find the sounds that you like, because nowadays we have so many sounds and such at our disposal that every track that you do can encompass a lot of different sounds. You can bring them together, and you can put the things in there. Like right here, this is a track that I put together, and this is all done, I do believe, on a FL Studios program. And the drums and the sounds or whatever, you try to make something that's appealing, that will keep the person going. You know, you got to realize that it is music, and it does have an energy level. A lot of times when I'm doing music, I like to describe the music as it's moving. You know, I'm like, you don't really want to keep the beat too stagnant and too predictable. I'm like, of course, there's drum patterns, and you can program 2 measures, 4 measures, 8 measures at a time, so forth, whatever, or however short you want to make them, or you can. I tend not to use samples of other songs, because that's a whole copyright publishing issue and concern, because then you end up having to pay if ever a song becomes popular, and you will have to pay the person, and you have to give them credit, so therefore that means that you're publishing money. Your royalties are split. Also, I told you guys before, I said part of my goal is to try to establish a sync licensing situation with music libraries, you know, so this is like the sync libraries are the people who sync licensing, basically. But the sync libraries are basically folks who you might hear the music in commercials, you might hear the music in backgrounds of movies and so forth and so on. And then the thing is that, from what I understand, that the music supervisors who are picking the music and who are paying out the artists, I think it's more so to their benefit to have someone who is not necessarily having to pay for sample clearance, and if everything is basically controlled in-house by one person as opposed to basically a lot of people. The reason why I say this is because looking at some of the credits that are on some albums that have come out recently, and I realized when I was online looking at other information, I'm not the only person that noticed this, but there are a lot of albums that basically have 16 or 17 songs on it, and out of those six, with those 16, 17 songs, it might be as many as 100 producers listed on the album. Now, with that being said, I'm not saying the albums are overproduced, but I'm saying the thing is that because a lot of people are basically using samples and not necessarily playing live or creating their own sound or crafting their own sound, which is also part of the cultivating creative ideas of episode 4, they end up having to pay credits, pay and give credit and royalty to the original maker of the song. So with that being said, I try to keep up with what's going on in the music industry, because when I'm trying to market my sound, my music, when you read and you look at what folks are saying as far as what people like, they tell you to basically find a sound and do a, it's called a beat type situation, which is basically if you like a said artist and you want to try to market your material towards that artist, when you list your music on these distribution sites for producers and for artists, these beat leasing sites, they tell you to put your stuff as a type that is familiar with, so this way people will, I guess, shop you and find you easier because you are saying that you sound like this person. I opted not to do that because I did not necessarily know who I sound like, but then I tried it their way. So their way was basically, if you want to move a lot of stuff, you find a producer that's selling and you basically do what he's doing. I'm like, you create a drum pattern the way he's creating a drum pattern. You use a type of sample or a melody that he's using or she's using, and you basically emulate what they're doing, and you hope that you could get a fraction of the success that they get, because it's like, if you like what they're doing and I'm doing the same thing that they're doing and our music sounds similar, why would you not like mine? And mine is more accessible as far as price wise if you are an artist trying to capture that person's sound. With all that being said, I was majorly taken back because it's one thing, alright, so as a person who plays music, you have basically, what, 12 functional keys on 7 or 8 octaves to play around with, and you have all your chord structure, and you have your notes, and you have certain chords, progressions that go well together, as opposed to other ones that don't go well together. So when you are putting a song together, and you are trying your best to do this, and you're putting out a track, and you're putting it together, and you're thinking like, okay, I'm going to listen to what's popular, and then come to find out what's popular, the person who is doing the track is basically taking a sample from another song, and either they're speeding the sample up or they're slowing the sample down, and they're taking maybe two bars of the beat and they manipulate it, they chop it up a little bit, they put it back in, they add some effects onto it, so forth and so on, and they put it out there. And the bad thing about it is that it sounds really good, but you still have to pay the creative who created that song. There is a thing going on now where you can look online and they'll be shocked because they'll sit back and tell you that, oh, this song has the melody of another song, and out of curiosity, you're sitting there thinking like, how are they doing this? And they're not necessarily paying for the song, or you don't know if they're the deal done in the background. And when the song is done, how are you basically using the same cadence or the same melody of a song? It's crazy. It's I think it's called inner pollination. That's what it's called. So basically what it is that you get a artist who's making a song, and their hook is very similar, or their music or their melody is extremely similar to the hook or melody from a song that's 20 years old, 30 years old, 5 years old, so forth and so on, and all they do is they change up the lyrics a little bit and whatever. So I don't know, like, I'm sure that there's some type of deal with the distribution and the marketing of the record company that maybe perhaps it's already worked out, and us as listeners, we're just saying, oh, it sounds familiar. But I think there's a lot of stuff going on where there's only so many notes that a person can play, but when you straight jack a track and you don't necessarily give credit to the person who wrote the track originally, I think that's kind of a little bad, because nowadays I basically use this new thing called interpolation, I think it's called interpolation. This is when you have folks and they are taking melodies of songs, they're taking the cadence of choruses and hooks, verses, and they're changing the lyrics. And sometimes, from what I see when I look at the credits and I look things up, sometimes the writers are listed and credited on the original song, and sometimes they're not. But thing is, to the average person, when you're listening to the song, you can clearly say that the song sounds exactly like the song that it was taken from. And oddly enough, depending on what the case is, to a layman, to, like, don't get me wrong, the contract could state that, oh, the song would be able to be used because of whatever the reason may be, or the person that you're attributing the song to maybe didn't write it, or maybe it's in the free domain category of music, which I don't think it is, because like sometimes the song is only a couple years old or whatever, or a couple decades old. But there are so many loopholes that people get around doing it. And what I'm trying to say is that cultivating creative ideas all start somewhere. And sometimes it starts with another person's song. And sometimes it starts with another person's melody. And I guess technically you can't be mad, because like I said, there's only so many notes and so many chords that you could play, and things are going to sound similar, and no one is trying to technically reinvent the wheel. You know, I'm like, everyone is just trying to make things that sell, or try to make things that move a person. And I've said this before, and I think I said it in every episode, and I think I will continue saying it. The greatest compliment I think a musician or a person can have is if your music could basically fade into the background and not necessarily be a super, super standout to a point that it doesn't sound as though it's good, or if people are over-critiquing because the sounds clash. So I guess a familiar is a good situation, because it reminds you of something else and it puts you at ease. It might manifest memories, or it might make you like the song more, or it might make you revisit the original song. There was a song that was popular that I was turned on to a couple years ago, and then not until I was actually in the market and I heard another version of the song, and I was thinking like, oh wow, I wonder if this artist got paid because this person is doing that sort of song. So then when I went to go look that up, I found out, shocking to me, that the song that I was introduced to was a cover song from the 60s, the late 60s, and was basically redone over in, I think it was like 2020 or something like that. And it sounds so cool, but I was unaware that this song existed prior to it, that I was wondering if the group that I was turned on to was actually the third or fourth group that redid the song. The group that I heard doing the song was actually using the original song and its chorus. So it's wild. I'm like, but the thing is, the guy from the 60s is credited on as a writer on all these tracks, so therefore you realize that's crazy in a way, because financially you look at it that, wow, he wrote this song that it was okay. I'm like, I looked at the chart position of it back in the day, and it did good, but like, it wasn't super great. But if the second or third group that covered the song didn't do the song justice financially, this last group who did the song, they got bank on, they collected the bag on the song. So I'm sure the writer was quite happy, because if he's still alive, or his family, his estate, or whatever the situation may be, has collected a lot of funds based upon something that he did. But it was part of the creative process, and it's cool. It's cool. Music is out there to be listened to, and music is out there to be shared. But once again, I am coming to the end of my time chit-chatting with you guys. This was a fun episode. It wasn't a fact-filled episode like episode 3. Please, if you get a chance, go to Apple, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get your podcast from, and look me up, Why Make Music, hosted by Think Tim. I'm getting there. Thank you for tuning in. For those who listen, it's a very good, humbling situation to be able to put something out and to talk and rap with you guys and chop it up and I enjoy it. Please check me out on all my social platforms. Think Tim, WDMN, Aition, WDMN, ATION. That's on Instagram. There's some cool artwork on there. Plus, there's some music stuff on there. The website is thinktim.com. You can find my music on all streaming platforms. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Tidal, SoundCloud. Check me out. Like I said before, there's a Patreon account. You can look me up. I haven't put anything on there yet extra special because I don't have anybody to do it for. But thank you for listening. Once again, thank Tim, if nothing else. Peace.